Daily Scramble Live with Tyler Russell and Jason Fetty. Today's guest.
Today, all the way from South Africa, we'll have the band Civil Twilight.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Russell and Jason Fetty.
Yes, good morning. It's Daily Scramble Live with me and Tyler. Hello.
Hello. We're going to play a game of Generation Gap today. Mind the Generation Gap.
Are we going to... Oh, so...
No, you hang up first.
We're going to talk to Civil Twilight and we're going to look at some rare tracks in Waldman's Wardrobe.
This is Daily Scramble.
We could have named that more sensibly, couldn't we?
It's a good morning, everyone.
Yeah, morning. Happy Tuesday.
On KX93.5, your daily scramble news now.
First up in local news this morning, courtesy of the Laguna Beach Independent Newsroom, the question of storing nuclear waste at San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station near Camp Pendleton is a hot topic of two meetings this week. A contingent of protesters from Laguna Beach and other surrounding beach cities will attend the California Coastal Commission meeting today at noon at the Long Beach Convention Center, 300 East Ocean Boulevard. The commission will hear Southern California Edison's request to build and operate a storage facility for spent nuclear fuel. At least 20 activists say they will object to the plan to store 1,600 metric tons of volatile radioactive nuclear waste at the plant. The plant's two power units were shut down in January 2012 due to a radiation leak and permanently decommissioned in June 2013. On Wednesday, the city is hosting, this is a separate story, an education fair organized by the operator of the nuclear power plant to answer questions from the public regarding the plant's decommissioning. The open forum will take place from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the community room at the Susie Q Community Center, 380 3rd Street.
Sorry, what day was that again, Ty? What was the day of that thing?
The Coastal Commission meeting is today, and you can go and object, basically. And Wednesday, tomorrow, is an education fair organized by the operator of the nuclear power plant to answer questions.
We could all use a bit more education on that, couldn't we? Because I don't know about you, but my gut says,
Right. I feel like people probably don't even really know what they're protesting.
Right.
Which doesn't surprise me.
No, I mean, but your gut does say, this is a scary big thing. It's a big scary thing, that big San Onofre thing. And now it's closed. So it's a big scary dead thing now.
Yes.
And so it's just a scary thing. We could use more information.
But as with most things, it's important to get all the facts straight before protesting them.
Right. But if this fair thing is organized by the owners of the San Onofre, you know, it's
you're
all
thinking
a
there's
bit,
a little bit of bias.
Well, there will be, won't there? Because they want to do what they want to do.
Right.
On the other hand, they don't want to kill people, I don't think.
Well, you can learn more tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you can go up to the Coastal Commission meeting today.
Okay. So.
And you can report back. Outside of the Laguna bubble this morning, California will become the fifth state to allow terminally ill patients to legally end their lives using doctor-prescribed drugs after Governor Jerry Brown announced on Monday he signed one of the most emotionally charged bills of the year. Brown, a lifelong Catholic and former Jesuit, announced he signed the legislation after thoroughly considering all options and discussing the issue with many people, including a Catholic bishop and two of Brown's doctors. In the end, I was left to reflect on what I would want in the face of my own death, he said. I do not know what I would do if I were dying in prolonged and excruciating pain. I am certain, however, that it would be a comfort to be able to consider the options afforded by this bill. Big news. Only five states. We're one of them.
Yeah, that is big news. It's creeping across the United States. All legal in Europe, all that stuff.
Really?
Great, the Jesuits. They're good people, the Jesuits. They've got they're the scientists of the Catholic Church. They're really good. They do what they have all the doctrine and then they put it all to one side and go, okay, now what's really going on?
I think this is a really good example of using your own religion in office. I mean, the man is a very religious man, but was able to look at people's needs and consult with his ministry and consult with his doctor. And he balanced a lot of options before coming to what I think is a pretty reasonable decision.
Right, right. That's what I'm kind of saying about those. The Jesuit movement is they have all the Catholic doctrine, and then they go, okay, what's really going on? Boots on the ground with human beings.
Right.
Yeah, so it's great. I mean, obviously, nobody wants to end their lives today, but if you know, were faced with that decision, you'd want to be able to make your own decision, I would think.
As it is your own decision.
Yeah.
Also in national news this morning, a Florida cop has been fired for repeatedly using an electroshock weapon on a shoplifting suspect, a taser, who was inside a residence with his hands raised. The officer's police report said the suspect refused to show his hands, according to local media. Police authorities in Zephyrhills, Florida, announced the firing of the 10-year veteran officer, Tim Clausen, on Friday. The footage of Clausen tasering Lester Brown, who complained of shoulder aches and dizziness after he was arrested, was captured on the video camera attached to the officer's taser. The firing of the 36-year-old officer comes as police officers' conduct is under intense internal and external scrutiny in the wake of high-profile shootings nationwide. Both the cops and the public have become fixated on filming one another. In this instance, police released the video on Friday, and police officials learned of the September 9th tasering after a routine review of police reports.
He should go and work on a cow farm or something, shouldn't he? Give him a cattle prod.
I always feel like there's more to these stories, and we're very quick. I like cops. I'll say that. We're very quick to judge and scrutinize the way they behave because of what's happened. It's all about example setting from others that has now made us critical of police officers. I'm not saying this guy should have been tasered over and over again, but we're very quick. We're very quick to do this right now.
I agree with you on
no,
this.
No, you don't.
I do.
No, you don't.
No, I do. I think that of all the interactions, the many hundreds of thousands of interactions the public has with the cops on a daily basis, there are very few as a percentage, you know, of these horrible things that the cops do. On the other hand, cops got to set an example. That's what they do. Yep. Yep. Unfortunately, when one of them does something like this, it just sets a bad precedent.
Right. In Laguna, we were handing out free Uber tickets, our cops were, and giving free breathalyzers a couple weeks ago, which is a great example of good cops doing nice things.
All right. So they do a few nice things. That's very nice. They do, you know, some cops go out into the community and, you know, buy everybody a milkshake and do breast examinations. Great, whatever. The point is that they've got a job to do. And when one of them does something like this, it just casts a shadow over everybody.
Right. Which we can agree is unfortunate.
There's going to be bad... But there's bad people everywhere, so what are you going to do?
Photographs...
Look at us, Tyler.
What about us?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
The photographs of Neil Armstrong taking his small step for man from Apollo 11 are instantly recognizable and some of the most famous in the world, of course. Mm-hmm. But there are equally stunning images from NASA's Apollo missions that are not so familiar. And it turns out they're so perfect, they look like they're stills from a sci-fi film. More than 8,400 photographs from NASA's moon missions have been uploaded to Flickr in high resolution, and they offer a fresh look at the lunar landings, including Buzz Aldrin's less-than-graceful descent onto the moon's surface. They've been uploaded by a team of enthusiasts as part of a project that's been running for 15 years.
So what are you saying that the photograph... Wait a minute. The big news there is the photographs look like they were in a movie set up by some... Are you one of these... Do you not believe that they...
We talked briefly about this yesterday. Yeah. And no, I of course believe the moon landing happened. And now we have 10,000 photos to show from it. How possibly could that have been faked?
I don't know. You can take 10,000 photos on a movie set, can't you?
I guess. And that is one of the rumors that Stanley Kubrick, right, helped stage the moon landing.
Yeah.
It's just preposterous.
I know,
is it
I
not?
Didn't believe it for a second.
It's ridiculous.
No, I think we went to the moon.
And why would we go through that trouble?
And what's the point exactly?
And people's argument is, well, we haven't gone to the moon lately. Okay, fine. There's nothing there. We went there. We saw a rock. We realized the atmosphere wasn't sustainable. We can't breathe up there. There's nothing to study from it. We have no reason to go.
The argument is, now, if you're forgetting about the political situation at the time, the argument is that we did it in order to beat the Russians.
Right. I guess, that's right.
Because they sent their satellite up, their Sputnik. And we were all, ooh, we can't let the Russians do that. That's not good. We're the big boys in town. It's that whole thing of us just not, like we were talking about yesterday, how we just won't, we don't want to apologize.
Right.
We've got to be the big boys in town. That's the argument. And I can see that argument. But I still think we went to the moon.
There's no way.
I can't, you know.
Mars is far more interesting to NASA right now.
If we didn't go to the moon, I'm leaving this country.
All right, everybody prove that we didn't go to the moon.
No.
There was a thing on Reddit yesterday from NASA scientists talking about how likely it is that we're going to be sending people to Mars and the chances of colonizing Mars.
Yeah.
It is more promising than ever, and it freaked me out.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere and the way that the gases are and the way that it can sustain our equipment and architecture, it's all perfect. It's all like Earth. And it almost proves that there were inhabitants there once and that there can be again.
Possibly bacteria, they're thinking, though. Not intelligent, conscious life. That's highly unlikely.
Think? Yeah, that's
what the scientists are saying. It's freezing cold up there. It was 59 degrees in the canyon this morning, and it's way colder than that on Mars. Seriously, it's very, very cold. That's the only thing about Mars, isn't it? Have you seen The Martian yet, the movie?
No, I really want to see it.
I'm dying to see
it. And this NASA guy who was on this thing was saying that it actually is a kind of a real parallel of what's going on right now. It's not far from truth. All right, let's finish the headline this morning. Mm-hmm. One in three 911 calls is...
Okay, finish the headline.
Stupid.
Well, I'm sure that's true.
Fake and stupid and annoying.
The answer is a butt dial.
Oh, a butt dial.
Yeah. There's been a massive jump in 911 calls in the past few years. There were 26% more calls in 2014 than 2011. And the biggest culprit is butt dialing.
Wow.
Yeah. The policy is to investigate every call. The dispatchers actually have to call the number back and say, hey, man, your butt just called 911. That's a big drain on emergency resources. So they're trying to figure out some alternatives to make it so butt dialing isn't so prevalent.
Yeah, it's a big problem for them. They have to employ a lot of people. As you say, there's a big process when anybody calls 911. It's a whole shenanigans.
Yeah.
So we were talking to some fire guys the other day who came in here to visit. Very nice to see them. And they were saying that's one of the biggest problems. That it messes up the system.
Fortunately, from what I understand, it's not too big of a problem in Laguna Beach. We have two dispatchers. Although they have very grueling shifts, I've been there in the walkthrough. It's really quite interesting.
Wow!
But there's not an overwhelming amount of activity like you might see in some bigger, more dangerous cities.
So we have a low incidence of butt dialing. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know if we have a low incidence
of
butt dialing.
What is it about our butts that makes the dialing so?
It's just the plastic surgery, I think.
Yeah, could it easily be? Yeah. Are we well fed? And we have fancy phones.
That's your news today. Thanks to the Independent Newsroom and all the other online sources. Give us news.
Thanks, Ty.
Daily Scramble live on KX93.5. Good morning, Jason Fetty.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. I'm excited. I'm going to Las Vegas this weekend.
Oh, I've just been.
You just
there
went,
last weekend,
right? We should have planned this better.
Yeah.
Could have gone together.
I don't like it.
I know you don't.
I think I just eat badly and I sleep badly and I don't look after myself and I come home feeling like, you know what. And when I told you that yesterday, you said a great thing.
What did I say?
You said, I think that's everybody's experience of Vegas, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're unique in that or whatever.
Right. Except I don't drink or gamble myself, you know, into feeling crap.
Yeah.
I eat and don't sleep.
There's some great food in Vegas.
There is some great food in Vegas, yeah.
My buddy Dave and I, who's going with me, we're trying to find a place to play golf. And there's like three courses on the strip that kind of cascade under the hotels. And I'm thinking, what don't they have? What doesn't Vegas have?
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
You can have three courses on three courses. Hey, you like that? Yeah, but you see, I don't eat well at Vegas. I don't go out and eat expensive meals. I eat at Denny's mostly.
Well, that could be your other problem.
Why. That's the reason why, yeah.
You eat better at home.
Denny's have got this new thing. They've got this new huge sausage. Have you seen that? Haven't seen it, no. They've got a, you know, the usual breakfast. They've got the usual little sausages.
How often do you go to Denny's?
I've been recently been a couple of times. It's a musician's thing, you know, at the end of a gig, go down
okay.
to Denny's.
All right.
You know, get your breakfast, get your all-day breakfast at 1 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, they've started selling this great big sausage, the Mega Banger sausage. I don't even know what it's called.
The Mega Banger?
I don't know what it's called. I don't know.
Probably that's, not that's called not the that. Mega Banger.
I'm not even going to Google it. I don't care. But it's a big old sausage. It's a very British kind of banger. Oh, it's a delight. And it goes in looking like a banger, comes out looking like a banger as well. Same
one of,
thing.
One of my favorite episodes of a fellow radio program is them hanging out in a diner all night long for 24 hours and seeing what kinds of people come in and out at different times of the day and talking to the staff. And they don't even have keys to the doors of 24-hour diners because they never close.
Never close, yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Fascinating as well. You know what I find really fascinating, the drive to Vegas, is those places that are the middle of nowhere. Betty, what do you call that one? Betty Boo's, Betty Blue's Cafe, Yermo, California. You know where that is?
I've never been to Betty Blue's.
But it's Betty something. Have somebody call in, 715-5936. It's Betty something. Betty Boops? No.
Are you thinking of the Mad Greek?
No, but it's... No, that's at...
That's another one.
That's at Baker.
Beaumont, I think.
No, Baker. It's at Baker.
Okay.
This one is at Yermo, which is where there's just like a military base.
Right.
And on the other side of the freeway, there's that... where they stop you and look for oranges when you're coming back into California. You know, like there's a stop there, some sort of immigration stops, something like that. Anyway... I always ask the waitress, where do you live? Because it's fascinating to me. Where do people live? What are they? I mean, it's the middle of nowhere.
So where do they live?
A lot of them live in like Barstow. So they drive many a mile
to go to this touristy restaurant.
It's the place where they've got like a little toy store in the back. And great, these.
Like a Cracker Barrel?
Something, I don't know what that is.
I love Cracker Barrel.
What is that?
It's kind of like Denny's, except. A little more hick and not open at night. Oh, and they have games.
I think this place is 24 hours. There's big signs at 50 miles to 50 miles. That's how long that road is.
Right.
50 miles to Betty Bloops or whatever it's
there's
called.
So many people driving from Los Angeles to Las Vegas that there's successful businesses along the road.
Sure.
That's remarkable.
No, it's great. I mean, it's a little taste of what I imagine Route 66 was like.
Yeah.
Because it's not all big corporate. You know, Denny's, whatever.
Well, we're going to have a train soon in California that goes from San Francisco to San Diego, a bullet train.
Really?
Well, sometime. They've been talking about it for a while.
Really?
But think about the weird places that are now going to be things because the train's going through there.
Those fast trains is the slowest process of any government thing I've ever heard of.
Why?
Isn't it? They're talking about it for years and years, same in Britain.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Talking about it forever and ever and ever. Oh, yeah, we're going to have these bullets. We're going to be like Japan one of these days. We're not.
I really would like that. I'd like to be able to get to Los Angeles or San Francisco an alternative way. It's too close to fly and too far to drive to go to San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. But Vegas is just, you can just about drive it.
Yeah, it feels all right.
It's all right, that drive.
Got some friends in the car.
It's a weird thing for me to know that drive the way I know it.
I'm so surprised you do. Well, your mom lives there.
Yeah, my dad lived there forever. My brother lives there. So that drive, that every turn, I know where I kind of mark the journey. Like I know I'm close.
Yeah.
And I get to a certain hill.
I know what you're talking about. The hill that goes way up, and then you get over it, and you can see Prim. That one,
right? That's very close.
Yeah.
Then you're really there. Yeah. Yeah. Stop at Prim Nevada, go look at the terrible stores.
Can I stay with your mom?
Yeah.
Because my whole problem with Las Vegas this weekend is I can't find a hotel.
Oh.
Because it's booked solid.
Really?
And someone who lives there told me that, there's a convention going on this weekend. There's a big convention. And they didn't say what. So I went on the Google and I said, Las Vegas conventions. You know what turned up?
What?
The World Gay Rodeo Finals.
Yeah, my mum's in it. I'm glad you mentioned my mum. Yeah, she's in that. No, she's not. The gay rodeo.
The World Gay Rodeo
Finals. I'm going to tell you something. Rodeo, if you're like a hick kind of dude, rodeo is gay. I don't care how macho you think you are. It's those big pants and the cowboy hat. Very gay.
So Avis, you're saying that World Gay Rodeo Finals is a redundant?
It's totally redundant, yeah. Peggy Sue's Diner, by the way. Peggy Sue's.
Oh, someone told us?
Diner, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for texting in, which you can do at 715-5936. Anytime during the show. All right, let's play a song. I can't wait for the gay rodeo
Wait, I
want
to find out about the gay rodeo thing. Are the horses gay?
All I know. I don't know
who's
gay.
All the animals gay?
Everybody's gay.
The whole thing.
You have to be gay to go.
Great.
It's at South Point Casino. We're interviewing this band later on this morning. They're called Civil Twilight. This is Daily Scramble Live, Laguna Beach's one and only morning show, so you have to listen to it. Hi, Jason.
Yeah, you've got no choice, and I love Tuesdays.
Why do you love Tuesdays?
Because we do two things that are really music-centered, and we get to get excited in a geeky way.
Do we always do this on Tuesday?
About music. I think we do, don't we? Mind the Gap.
All right.
Mind the Gap, and then we have Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness coming up a bit later on in the morning, where Mike Waldman, local musicologist, an absolute music nerd, comes on the air and we, you know, talk about music. He brings tracks in. Well, we do it first with a thing we call Mind the Gap.
Mind the Generation Gap.
Yeah. Recognize that music?
It's a TV theme song.
Yeah.
It's from Family Ties.
No, it's Sanford and Son. I'm Sanford, and you're the son. Hello, lad.
Okay, so yeah, we're going to try to guess songs from each other's generation, Jason and me. This doesn't involve you as a listener, I'm sorry.
No, but I must say that you, even though my choices of music are going to be way better than yours.
Right.
Because my generation is better than yours. Mm-hmm. You will know those songs, and I'm unlikely to know yours.
No, it's the other way around.
You think so?
I think mine have permeated society so dramatically that you can't not know them. Yeah. And I wasn't even alive when these songs came out, so how can you expect me to know them?
No, you have a good knowledge of music, and your father rammed music down your throat when you were a kid.
He did. He raised me well.
Yeah.
Shall we listen to one of yours first,
sure,
since you're bragging about them?
Why not?
We're going to play one of Jason's songs and see if I know what it is. Here we go. I do know it.
Yeah, you know this.
I do know it for sure.
Ching!
See, I hate this game because it's embarrassing to me because everybody in their car is like, you idiot, Tyler, you're so dumb. But I'll get it.
It's going to be the same for me. I know it.
Yeah, it's you know.
Here we go.
A Psycho Killer. It's Talking Heads. All right. Whoa, man. It would have been bad if I didn't get that.
You got there.
Yeah.
So, a song written by David Byrne, obviously, from Talking Heads. Actually, it was written by... It was a pre-Talking Heads song. Tina Weymouth and David Byrne, who went on to create Talking Heads, they had a band called The Artistic. It was written in 1974. And I loved this band. And it was such... They were so weird. If you compare them to the stuff that was... You know, most of us... Think of the Eagles. Think how different.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Was this the first time music became weird? You know what I mean? Is this like just the epitome of the 80s?
No, it's not. Music went bad after this.
Okay. But did this start it?
I think so. I think they were one of those kind of in the same vein as Velvet Underground or something like that. But the songs were much more accessible than that. They were danceable. People were dancing to this. You know, it was post-disco, or it was right in the middle of that, 1977. This song came out on Talking Heads 77, and then it was famously in the movie Stop Making Sense. Have you seen that film?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you got to see it. David Byrne at his greatest. And he comes out with a boombox, and he puts it on the stage, and he says, I've got a tape I want to play you. It's a live gig.
Okay.
And he puts the tape in, and the drum machine starts playing from this song.
Cool.
And then he starts thrashing on acoustic guitar, and he plays it live just with this boombox, and it was groundbreaking at the time.
Before my time.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would have seen that.
Yeah, great film. Really fun film.
All right, let's play a song from my generation. Again, we're guessing songs from each other's time. And mine don't have big, intricate stories. They're just songs because that's all they are. You know what I mean?
By the way, there is a modern version of this by Cage the Elephant. Have you heard that song? I haven't heard it. I just saw it online.
No, I have not.
Apparently so. We should look. We should look for it.
Are you ready for my first pick?
Yeah.
Mind the generation gap. I wish you
would step back from that ledge, my friend. Oh, man. So good. Cut ties with all the lies that you've been living in. And if you do not want to see me again, I would understand.
So it's British, right? British band?
You must know, be. I don't think they are.
No?
I'm 90% sure they're not.
Fake British accent.
No, I'm confirming. No, no way. They're not British. You're the first to fight. You're way too loud. You're the flash of light on a burial shroud. I know something's wrong. Well, everyone I know has got a reason to say, put the past away. Wish you would step back from that. Now you don't know?
No, it's nice and jolly, though. It's good songwriting. Who is
it's a
it?
Great song. Third Eye Blind.
Oh, okay.
Third Eye Blind. The song is Jumper. The chorus, I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend, about a jumper.
Right.
Right. 1997. Band's from San Francisco, not England.
Right, but fake English accent. That's very interesting. Because for many years, British bands have had a fake American accent.
Right.
Yeah.
A little bit cooler the other way around. I just remember being at summer camp, and this song and Semi-Charmed Life, you know that one? Semi-Charmed Kind of Live, baby, baby. Third Eye Blind. They were big, man, when I was like camp years.
Yeah.
You know, 9, 10 years old.
I know. I just wasn't paying attention. Makes me think of Frank Turner.
You know what? A little bit. Yeah, except he's actually British.
Right. But there's sort of the melody and everything and the way he's sort of telling a story.
Yeah.
He's engaging in that way. A lot of charisma in his voice.
No idea what happened to Third Eye Blind, but... late 90s, early 2000s, when I was at the height of my rock listening years, this band was big. Shall we do another one from your generation?
Yeah, let's do it. That was good that you educated me.
You're welcome. Here we go.
Mind the generation gap. I was 21 years when I wrote this song. I'm 22 now, but I won't be for long. People ask me, when will you grow up to be a man? But all the girls I love at school are already pushing prams. I loved you then as I
This is British.
Right, I was just thinking, you know, this segment's called By the Generation Gap, but there's more than just a generation gap between you and I. There's a cultural or a geographical gap as well.
That's true. Yeah, I don't think anybody in America knows this song.
Well, this guy's got some connections to America. It's Billy Bragg.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that one.
And it had a big hit with this in 1983. It wasn't his first album, but this was a hit in America for Kirsty MacColl. Remember her? Probably not.
No.
Anyway. So this guy did. This guy went on to make a movie with Wilco about Woody Guthrie's life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
Actually, not about Woody Guthrie's life, about the making of an album of Woody Guthrie songs with Wilco. And it was great because they didn't get on. So as the movie unfolds,
yeah,
they start to get angry with each other.
Like, actually?
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, so the thing fell apart. The album didn't receive really great reviews.
We listened to the new Wilco song yesterday. I don't know. They don't really do it for me.
Really?
Not really. Billy Bragg, all right.
Billy Bragg, and it starts, so the song starts with the words, I was 21 years when I wrote this song. I'm 22 now, but I won't be for long, which are identical to the opening lines of Paul Simon's song, Leaves That Are Green, off of Sound of Silence.
Huh. So he's facts.
He does pilfer. He's a pilferer.
Is that cool?
I don't know.
All right, it's ending. So let's play another one.
All right.
All right, a song from my generation. This is Mind the Generation Gap, guessing songs from the old and the new, sort of.
Mind the Generation Gap. Come, my lady, come, my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Come, my lady, come, my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar.
Oh, this was huge. It was so huge.
Wasn't it?
And I didn't pay any attention to who it was.
But you know it was huge. I admit, I don't know anything about this song. I didn't do any research on why or how or what. But it's Butterfly by Crazy Town.
Crazy Town. I mean, it must have been the only hit.
Absolutely.
One hit wonder.
Absolutely, it was the only hit. And nobody cares about anything in the song except for that one hook.
Yeah, come my lady.
That's the only thing anybody knows or cares about. I had a 90s party last summer, and when this came on, my 20-somethings friends, everybody died.
Really?
They were so excited.
Loved it.
All right, let's do another one from your generation. Mind the generation gap. Yeah.
It's a great track, actually. I mean, sonically, you know, just the way it sounds is great. And see why it was a big hit.
I think it's just a simple guilty pleasure track for me. I'm glad you like how it sounds, though.
Something about rap. I'm you know, obviously I'm 30 years late.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of getting it now.
You finally got it.
I'm kind of getting what the point of it is. Still like a good singer, though.
Mind the generation gap.
I should know this, shouldn't I? Should I know this?
Well, maybe. Elliot Smith did it. Elliot Smith covered it.
Yeah, it must have been really depressing.
I loved Elliot Smith. And I actually fell in love with this song through him. And then I got the original, and this is the original version.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's Walk Away Renee by a band called The Left Bank. And they were sort of 60s art rockers. But the great story behind this is, actually, Rolling Stone, it says here, placed the song at number 220 in the 500 greatest songs of all time. Hello. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's quite an accolade. 220 out of 500 greatest songs of all time. It's pretty big.
Yeah, that is amazing, actually.
The zillions of songs.
The original version, not the Elliot Smith cover.
No, this version of it. So, it's a great story. It really was heartwarming when I read about it last night. Here's the story. The song is one of a number that the singer, let me find his name here, Michael Brown, wrote about it, the girlfriend of the bass player who he was totally fixated on. Like, he was in love with the bass player's girlfriend.
Okay.
All right. Remember, these guys are like, they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old.
Right.
Kids. He says, when they recorded the song, he says, my hands were shaking when I tried to play because she was right there in the control room. There was no way I could do it with her around, so I had to come back and do it later. He was so in love with this chick. Nothing ever happened between them.
Her name was Renee.
Yeah. Let me finish the story. It's great. Other songs written about her include the band's second hit, Pretty Ballerina, and She May Call You Up Tonight. That's a great song. After decades of obscurity, she was identified in 2001 as a noted singer, vocal teacher, and artist on the West Coast, Renee Fladen Cam.
Did you look up what she looks like?
Yeah, she's an older lady now.
Was she cute?
It doesn't say. I mean, I don't know.
She inspired albums.
Amazing, isn't it?
Helen of Troy.
Yeah, really.
Well done.
Yeah, cool.
All right, you want to do one more from me, or you want to call it?
Let's do one more from you. We've done three of mine, right?
Mind the generation gap.
This just makes me laugh, this one. You should get this.
Totally recognize it. Completely recognize
well,
it.
Well, this could be misleading.
Oh, this is so not for me.
I know.
Beyonce or one of those.
Yes, but.
Oh, no, she was in a band before.
Right.
With three girls or
yes,
four girls.
Yes.
And they were called. Oh, I don't know. Girls gone crazy.
No.
Girls.
Destiny's Child.
All right.
It's Survivor. By Destiny's Child.
Yeah, I mean, I really
from
would
the
not
early
know.
2000s.
That's a song. Come on the radio, but you get about a second of it.
It's a useless song.
And goodbye.
But when I was 12, It was my jam.
It was your thing, yeah. No, I know.
It was on Now That's What I Call Music, Volume 14. And yes, I had it. I had Volume 7 through 20.
Listen, I get it. I get it. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that because that's pre-prejudice. You get to, in your teens, you start to get prejudice. You start to pick, this is me, that's not me.
Totally.
And it's really not really a thing. It's not, it's all in your head, you know. And I recognize that now. When I was 12, though, I was listening to Elvis in the bath.
Well, see, you're much cooler. My favorite record was from Ricky Martin. I'm not kidding.
Really?
My favorite album. Yeah. I listen to it every day on the way to school.
Yeah, you see, it's not based on anything, but I want to be... you're sort of tribalizing yourself at that age, aren't you? These are my people. They wear their hair this way. These are not my people. They wear their hair that way.
Yeah, not till about 14, 15 did I do that.
Yeah.
And did I start listening to indie rock, and I was way too cool for anything else. And I actually deleted a bunch of songs on my iTunes that I thought were uncool.
Yeah.
And I later regretted that terribly because I wanted to throw it back, you know, but I didn't want people to see that I ever listened to Destiny's Child.
Right. I get it. And it's a thing where if you're a teenager and you're in that world right now, keep your music.
Oh yeah.
Keep everything. Cause you just don't know. And you'll want to review. I feel that although that was an important part of my musical education and my sort of socialization and all of that stuff, I feel like I missed out on some stuff just because I went, yeah, it's
right,
not for me.
Right.
You know, those people are idiots. And they're not, and it's great.
Well, that was our game of Mind the Generation Gap today. We'll do it once a week or so where we guess songs from each other's generation.
That's fun. I love doing this. I don't know what it's like for the listener.
We get excited about it.
We really like it.
Maybe we can involve somebody else next week and you can win a prize or something. I don't know.
That'd be cool.
We're always growing here on Daily Scramble Live.
Daily Scramble Live.
If you've never heard this before, let me explain. If you have heard this before, let me explain. If you, like me, wake up flustered and obsessing, here's a quick cerebral sorbet. It's a cleanser for your mental palate. It's a cerebral scrub. It's a loofah for your loaf. All right, so let's all just take a moment to meditate gently. And that's right. Take your hands off that. Don't touch that. Stop it. And just relax. Big deep breath. Here it is. A unique and interactive map which shows the location and severity of traffic accidents over the last decade has been launched in the UK. It was so popular that it crashed almost immediately.
That was the sorbet of the day.
Yes.
Oh, it's so fun looking for those.
Coming up, we're going to talk to the band Civil Twilight. We're going to talk to Rich, the drummer of Civil Twilight, who's a huge band.
Not Buddy Rich.
No.
Not your buddy Rich.
No. Huge band. They're out of South Africa. About 140,000 likes on Facebook. They've been placed in countless TV and movie shows, and you probably know their song Who Win or Holy Dove, or Win Win, rather, both of which we've been playing here on the station.
Mm.
They've been in Terminator, One Tree Hill, I Am Number 4.
How do bands do that? We should ask them.
We got to ask him.
Yeah, we got to find out.
Big band. We'll talk to him in 5 minutes
cool.
or so.
Daily Scramble Live. Daily Scramble, Daily Scramble Live. Daily Scramble, Daily Scramble Live.
That's the second time we've harmonized.
That wasn't harmonized. That was, it was dissonance.
Well, that's
as opposed to harmony.
That's why I'm a musician.
Yeah. You invented radio, you said earlier on. That was great. That was great.
Thanks for listening to our morning show, Daily Scramble Live here on KX93.5. I've been Tyler Russell.
And I have been Jason Fedde. It's been really fun. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll show myself out.
And I will get my coat.
Your what?
Coat. Not goat.
I was like, wait a minute, these guys are just up the street. But we actually had the day off yesterday, so we stayed down here, and now we're heading up today to L.A. because we play in L.A. tonight.
How's Doheny today?
How is it?
Yeah. Oh,
it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. Light offshore breeze, kind of a little bit of misty, warm, Yeah, it's great. I'm sure it's probably similar where you guys are, right?
Considering it's only 5 minutes down the road.
Away, yeah. Yeah. Now, you're clearly not from around these parts, Richard.
Yeah. So, we're from South Africa.
Yeah.
So, I grew up on the beach in Cape Town. So, I like these parts. Reminds me of home.
I've heard that before, that Laguna area is a bit like Cape Town.
Yeah, it is. Definitely has a similar feel and lifestyle, probably.
A little more mountainous, I'm told. The hills are a little higher.
In Cape Town, yeah, definitely. There's some real legit mountains out there.
Well, you know, there seems to be a kind of a scene in South Africa that we're not really that aware of. We've got like Springbok Nude Girls and Just Ginger and Parlour Tones and a South African band.
Yeah.
But we're not really, you know, it seems like a long way away. What's the scene like down there? Is it a very close-knit musical scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting bigger and bigger. Honestly, we left South Africa almost 10 years ago and moved to America. So we're a little bit out of the scene, but we go back and play there pretty often. There's a lot going on in the kind of African sort of inspired electro kind of scene that's starting to happen there. And then there's always rock bands influenced by kind of Europe and American music. I mean, The Unfoot obviously is one that did pretty well. You guys would know as well. Die Unfoot, as they call them here.
Yeah, they're some goofy fellows and ladies.
Yeah, they're kind of interesting blokes.
Is there much crossover between the two communities, the black and the white communities there, in terms of like in bands? Are there many multiracial bands?
There are a few. And there's like in Cape Town, there's a big jazz scene.
Right.
And there's way more crossover in that scene.
Sure.
And it's sort of African-influenced jazz, which is pretty cool. And we grew up listening to quite a lot of that sort of thing, and we'd go to the local clubs and watch really great musicians play, actually, that nobody has ever heard of. But there's some really good players, and there's some crossover there within the rock scene. There wasn't as much. The rock scene tends to be more white guys playing, but yeah, there's some crossover. I'd say that's happening more now. The crossover.
Well, you've certainly done well over here, Rich. Again, the band Civil Twilight is who we're talking about. They've got a new album out called "Story of an Immigrant." Just came out in July. And they played the Observatory last week on Saturday, and they have a show tonight at the Roxy in Los Angeles. A band called Tower is opening for them. We had that duo in a couple weeks ago performing live. Really cool supporting band for you.
Yeah.
So how have things been going?
Good. This is kind of a full headlining tour for the record. We did some festivals in the summer, and now we're out for a month and then another 2 weeks in November, kind of doing headlining clubs, and it's been great. Yeah, I mean, we've had a really good response from fans to new music. We're really excited about the new album, and it's been fun to get out there and play for people, for sure. Yeah.
Do you like that group, those two guys from Tower? We liked them a lot when they performed in here.
Yeah, that's great. I'm actually super familiar with them. They're just on the show in L.A.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to check them out tonight. And then we have another band touring with us called Knox Hamilton.
And, yeah, they're great.
We know about them too. Yeah.
Aren't they from are they from Arkansas or something like that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
No, I like them a lot. All my relatives live in Arkansas, so I like Knox Hamilton. You know, I think what's made you guys so successful, one thing that's really cool about the ways bands make it these days, if you will, is all your TV and movie placements. I mean, you've been on One Tree Hill, you were in Terminator, I Am Number 4, The Mentalist. Do you think that played a big part in your success?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been a huge part. From pretty early on, that was kind of the first thing that started to break for us. Was we, like music supervisors and those TV shows, they just really liked our music and started putting it in shows. And then that's how we got signed, and a lot of other things happened because of that. And it's continued to be a really good, just like a really good thing for us. Like people, our music, for whatever reason, seems to work well in the film and TV thing, and we're really happy that it's worked out. It's a great way to get your music out there.
The music totally is that kind of filmic quality about it. And how does that happen when you come here from South Africa all this way? It really commands a bit of respect, I think. Come all this way over, move to Nashville, then make a decision, and everybody en masse move to LA. You guys must be like a family by now.
Yeah.
And how does it happen that you literally go knocking on doors with the music?
It's quite a journey, and a lot of it is like you meet one person and then know someone else and they introduce you to this person. But with the film and TV stuff, we actually we met someone who actually runs a company that pitches music to film and TV music supervisors. So they have relationships with all those people.
Right. Well,
she heard our first record and really liked it, and we started working with them, and they've become quite a big company now in LA. But at the time they were kind of starting out and we were kind of starting out, so we developed a good relationship with them, and that was kind of how the whole film and TV thing happened. And then from there, you know, you sort of meet other people and get other opportunities. Well, but you just kind of get out there and play and do what you can, and then sort of follow the trail. You know?
Yeah. Well, but you're a long way from home, and it must have been scary to do that initial thing. Or were you full of youthful enthusiasm when you first got on the plane?
We were definitely full of youthful naivety, maybe ignorance, but which is honestly probably what helped to push us over. I remember landing in LA for the first time, because that was where we first landed, and just flying over houses and houses for miles and miles and thinking, oh my goodness, what have we done? And it was a lot bigger and scarier than we thought it would be, because our only real experience of a big city was Cape Town, which is not really a big city compared to Los Angeles or this area. Yeah. But I think we told ourselves if it failed, we could go home and we'd just give it a shot. And yeah, we're still here, so...
Well, a little bit of ignorance has gone a long way for you guys, and we love the music very much. And
thanks,
hey, good luck to you, mate. It's really great talking to you. And is this tour an ongoing thing? Is it going to be more gigs?
Yes. Yeah, we're heading all the way up the West Coast. So we've already played Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. Kind of came down from Nashville and across the West, and now we're going all the way up to Vancouver, stopping along the way. So, you know, the West Coast is beautiful, so can't complain about that.
Well, again, you can see Civil Twilight at the Roxy tonight in Los Angeles. And thanks again for letting us present your show last week at the Observatory on that Saturday. You can download the new album, maybe at civiltwilightband.com. That's called Story of an Immigrant. And we're going to play the song Win-Win right now, Rich. Would you like to introduce it? I'll start playing it, and you can pretend to be a radio DJ and introduce your own song. How does that sound?
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, great.
Here we go.
Yeah. Well, this is Win-Win. It's on your record. It's kind of a South African influence in there. And we hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening.
Nice. Talk to you soon, buddy. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Cheers, mate.
Cut so deep, you'll need scuba gear. It's Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness on KX93.5.
That's easy for him to say, isn't it? Wardrobe of Wonderfully Waldman-iness.
Remember how many cuts it took, though?
I know. Yeah, we had to keep sending it back. Michael Waldman is here, and he brings music. He's a musicologist and a fan of music, and he loves music very much, and so he comes here with his music. That's what we do. So, Mike...
From the College of Musical Perversity.
Exact. Very nicely
put. The University of Musical Perversity.
Nicely put. So, you know that supermarket in South Laguna, Hagen?
Yes.
It's not Hagen.
Hagen-Dazs.
It's not a German supermarket.
What was it called?
It's just Hagen.
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 Hagen. Hagen. Hagen-Dazs.
You should be able to...
So Hagen, I never went to it.
Yeah.
Did you go to
it? I go there all the time. It's my grocery store.
Oh, really? So Mike, what do you think? Gelson's or Smart and Final?
Gelson's.
Yeah.
But there's already one in Dana Point. It's a mile away.
Yeah.
I think it's a done deal. I read it was a done
I
deal.
I actually heard that too, but it just bothers me a lot. It's a mile away.
What is?
Another Gelson's.
The other Gelson's.
Yeah.
If you could put anything in the world in there, what would you put in?
Like anything?
Anything.
Laser tag.
Laser tag, yeah.
Paintball.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's great.
Or a Smart and Final or a Stater Bros or something that's priced reasonably.
Right. I like Fart and Smile. Smart and File. Final Smart, whatever it's called. It's good, that. And you can get all your night guests. They sell some cutlery and stuff for the kitchen.
I just can't do another Gelson's. It's a mile away and it's so expensive.
It is expensive. Well, it's just another Hagen. Hagen.
No, it's more expensive than Hagen.
Is it?
Yeah.
Gelson's?
Yeah.
What's the other one? Bristol Farms. That's expensive.
Oh, that sounds nice.
That's what my wife wants. She wants a Bristol Farms.
Does she?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Champagne taste.
Well, I want a laser tag.
I don't know. Not Trader Joe's. What's the other one? Let's have a huge Starbucks. World's biggest Starbucks.
Nightclub.
Yeah, that's Starbucks. Starbucks nightclub. They should start doing that. Stay up very late.
Just coffee, alcohol,
drink the espresso. Michael Waldman, you come here every week and you bring your music with you.
Yes, I do.
Would you like to begin speaking about that now,
please? Yeah, well, you know, I bring stuff that music collectors would bring. Music collectors, historians, unreleased songs, outtakes, rehearsals, out-of-print stuff, live sessions, demos, stuff you're not going to hear unless you're a collector. And I do that so that people could have the sense of the history of the music.
Right.
And so we got some real interesting cuts today. The first, we're going to celebrate Stevie Ray Vaughan's 61st birthday.
Cool.
Just this past weekend, Stevie Ray would have been 61. Died very, very young, only 35 years old.
Yeah.
You know, when I was reading that, it was hard to believe. He was really, really young. And
wait a minute. I find it hard to believe that it's actually 20-odd years ago, 26 years ago.
Yeah.
That he died.
Yeah.
It seems like 5 minutes.
Did he die in 1989?
Yeah.
I was born the same day Stevie Ray Vaughan died. Maybe not day.
Maybe you were reincarnated. You are the reincarnated
Stevie
Ray Vaughan. You got to grow the little soul patch.
You've heard me play guitar. What do you think?
You should practice more. 26 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you know it's 20 years ago almost to the day that O.J. Simpson was freed. Was let off the first.
Oh, it was
the first
yes.
trial.
Yes.
The 20 years ago. Did you blink? If you blink, you missed those 20 years.
What was he driving? Do you remember what
Bronco?
It was a Bronco. Yeah.
What color?
Brown.
No.
White.
Bronco.
I wasn't even alive.
You all win the.
Yeah, I was.
You all win.
I was alive.
And what do we have for these young men? What awards do we have?
What do you mean?
You won the prize. That's all.
Oh, you won the prize.
Canned unicorn meat.
There you go.
Do you remember this? If the glove doesn't fit,
you must acquit. How do I know more about this than you guys?
Because it's so famous. It's in American history. The world changed more that day than 9/11. There's a controversial thing.
Wow, Jason. Oh, my God.
Well, getting back to Stevie Ray.
Go on, then.
He was pretty much a nobody until 1980. He went to the Montreux Jazz Festival, and two people saw him play there, and that changed his life. The first person who saw him was David Bowie. And David Bowie invited him to come play on his new album, which was Let's Dance, huge David Bowie hit. And actually, Bowie invited him to go on tour with him for that album. He went to the rehearsals. There's a very famous bootleg of the rehearsals with Stevie Ray Vaughan playing lead guitar. And then Stevie Ray quit the David Bowie band. He said,
wow.
This isn't for me. I want to be a solo act. I'm not going to be in a band. I'm going to take my chances. The second person that he met at Montreux was Jackson Browne, who gave him free studio time and introduced him to John Hammond. So John Hammond, who discovered Leonard Cohen, Billie Holiday, Count Basie, Bob Dylan, yeah. Benny Goodman, Bruce Springsteen, Aretha Franklin. and he signed Stevie Ray Vaughan. And his first album was called Texas Flood. And shortly after they recorded that album, they played a little tiny club in Philadelphia called Ripley's, and it was recorded for the radio. And we're going to be hearing a song called Testify from his first album, which was called Texas Flood, live in a tiny little club about the size of the studio in Philadelphia.
Wow, brilliant. Let's hear it. We'll talk more.
Good evening, and welcome to the Ripley Music Hall. This band has a great new record out. It's on Epic. It's called Texas Flood. I'm John DiBella from 93.3 WMMR. Would you please welcome from Austin, Texas, Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble.
So deep, you'll need scuba gear. It's Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness on KX93.5.
Every week, Michael Waldman comes in and brings music for us that he spent hours looking for on the internet.
And in my collection.
In his collection, yeah, and that was Stevie Ray Vaughan, right?
That was killer.
Really brilliant.
Awesome. Yeah. I loved the intro from the old-timey radio DJ at the beginning. That was my favorite part.
Yeah.
93.3 WKBZ.
He did a great job, didn't he?
Yeah, that was awesome. Because we do that. DJ's been doing that for decades, and I just heard it before I was even alive, and I do that still. It's just funny.
Right. Yeah. Just the way to go. Yeah. Say the name of the station, and say the name of the band.
And then get off the stage. That's
right.
Same way for decades.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, I read this thing about Stevie Ray when I was getting ready for the show today. And it's a quote from Clapton. And I don't know if you guys know, but Stevie Ray died leaving his last gig in a helicopter crash.
Hmm.
Very much like Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper.
Yeah.
And the gig was he was opening for Clapton.
Wow.
So his last two nights. And Clapton tells the story about how he would, he was watching Stevie Ray play the last two nights. And he was watching him, and he was so blown away by him that he started to get insecure, and he had to stop watching him.
Right.
Because he knew he wouldn't be able to play.
Wow.
With the lack of confidence out of watching Stevie Ray Vaughan. So I have a new theory. Ready for this theory?
I think I know where you're going with this.
Clapton killed Stevie Ray Vaughan.
And then
that's the new thing.
And then he wrote Tears in Heaven to make it all okay.
That's right.
That's actually about Stevie Ray.
It's not about his kids. It's about Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Wow. I think we should probably say a little disclaimer at this point.
I think we ought to start over.
The opinions on KX93.5 do not reflect those of its management or its board of directors.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
You heard it here first, and I'll be starting a website tomorrow. The Clapton Killed Stevie Ray website.
All right, what's our next rare track?
Okay, next rare track is, I just noticed, there's not a lot of awards that the United States government gives out to artists. You know, in all different countries, they give out awards. But in the United States, the award is the Kennedy Honors for Artistic Talent. And this year, along with the Eagles. Eagles are going to be getting that award from President Obama this year. Carole King, one of the most successful songwriters of all time. And I was looking her up. The amazing thing about Carole King is that she wrote over 400 songs that were recorded by 1,000 different people.
Wow.
Literally, 1,000 people recorded her songs. How does anybody do that?
Well, she was one of the last of the great Brill-building songwriters, wasn't she?
Yep.
You know, her and Jerry Goffin and all those guys. Yeah, it's quite a thing.
So she's going to get honored this year. And so I found a demo of one of her songs that I don't think many people know was one of her songs because it was recorded and it was a hit for the Monkees, one of the, completely prefabricated bands. So if the Beatles were the Fab Four, the Monkees were the prefab four.
Yeah.
Completely prefabricated. Yeah. And so the Monkees had a hit with a song called Pleasant Valley Sunday, and it was a little social commentary about the suburbs and how everybody is, very conservative in the suburbs, and they were the hippies on NBC.
They really were supposed to be the hippies, yeah. I mean, they were created to be a TV show. They weren't supposed to be an actual band, touring band.
Yeah.
It was about a band that lived in a house.
Yeah, and 50 years later, they're still touring.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, there's only two of them still alive. Mickey Dolenz actually there's three of them alive, Mickey, Peter, and Mike, and they still play. They still play individually, and they still play as a trio sometimes.
Amazing. I think they were actually the musicians in the band, weren't they?
Well, when they went on tour, they were, but not on the records.
Mike Nesmith's certainly a real musician.
Yeah. Do you know what he's famous for?
Oh, I do. His father was something.
His mother.
His mother. What was his mother?
Invented Whiteout.
That's right.
His mother invented
Whiteout. How random is that?
Wait, like the paper?
Yeah.
Whiteout.
Liquid paper.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Mike Nesmith's mother invented Whiteout.
So Mike Nesmith was a millionaire from Whiteout.
You know, I heard Jackie Onassis invented the brake light.
Could that be true?
Is that possible?
No.
It can't be possible,
I don't
right?
know. I went to school with a guy whose grandfather invented the photo booth.
That could be.
And Hans Zimmer, who's a multi-Grammy-winning orchestrator and songwriter and composer. He wrote all the music for The Lion King and lots of big movies.
Think Elton John wrote the music for The Lion King.
Just the one song.
No, he wrote them all.
Did he?
Yeah.
All right, so not that.
I co-wrote Yesterday.
What did he write then? He wrote some huge things.
You know, there's a guy in town who invented the frozen burrito?
No.
Yep, I don't know how you do that. You just freeze a burrito.
No.
Should we play this Monkees song?
So we're gonna start up playing the Monkees, and we're just gonna play a short clip of what it sounded like when it was hit in 1967, and then we're gonna play the Carole King demo so you could see where the song came from.
Here we go.
Here's group down the street is trying hard to learn their song. Serenade, the weekend squire just came out to mow his lawn. Another good the local rock group down the street is trying hard to learn their song. They serenade the weekend squire who just came out to mow the lawn. Another pleasant valley Sunday, charcoal burning everywhere, rows of houses that are all the same, and no one seems to care. So this is Grace, she's proud today because her roses are in bloom. And Mr. Green, he feels serene, he's got a TV in every room. Another Pleasant Valley Sunday, Pleasant Valley, here instead of simple land. Mothers complain about how hard life is, and the kids just don't understand. Creature comfort goes.
So deep, you'll need scuba gear. It's Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness on KX93.5.
Yes, and that was Carole King with a big hit for the Monkees, Pleasant Valley Sunday. Before we go, Mike, can I just want to tell you one thing.
Yes, sir.
That in 1994, Hans Zimmer won an Academy Award for the best original score. Do you know what film it was?
No, what was that?
It was The Lion King.
Okay. That's different.
If he scored it.
Oh,
come on.
See, Elton John did all the songs for The Lion King.
Then we were both right, Tom.
But the score...
We were both right.
You were probably more right. Doesn't Hans Zimmer still does all kinds of stuff,
Hans Zimmer.
He does... he just did Interstellar, I think.
That's right.
That was the most recent one. That was really cool.
Inception, Dark Knight Trilogy.
Yeah, he does all the big ones.
Last Samurai. That was huge.
Is that the Tom Cruise movie? That wasn't that big.
I thought it was massive, wasn't it?
No, not really.
I liked it.
You're probably right about that, too, then.
His grandfather invented the walker, old people walking. It's called a Zimmer frame.
How come everybody on the show this morning invented something?
Well, that's
something.
Why I mentioned him in the first place. All right. That was great. Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness.
Carole King did not kill Stevie Ray Vaughan.
No. Who did she kill? We'll find out next week. On Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness. Thanks, Mike.
I invented this song. I wrote it. I invented radio.